evening. Welcome back once again to the prepared portion of One Step Beyond. A point of information. A listener called up and was disturbed at the sarcasm that I was using. I'm not putting, by way of straightening out the record for those people who have misunderstood my tone, I'm not putting these people down at all. On the contrary, at the risk of seeming a trifle priggish, perhaps, I am a militantly compassionate human being, hence my choice of my life's work, which is trying to shed light on what I believe to be the assassinations of all of these people. The sarcasm that I'm using is meant, perhaps ineffectively so, to mirror the callous disregard with which our society views these deaths. I am not putting them down, nor am I being callous myself, but I am mimicking perhaps the tone that our society has chosen to address the deaths of those great and small. Back to the hit parade. Reading from the San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, March 27th of 1988. This is an AP story, datelined Wakulla, or Wakulla, W-A-K-U-L-L-A, North Carolina, headlined, Indian Candidate Slain at Home. A Lumbee Indian activist running for judge in his racially troubled county was found shot to death Saturday at his home, officials said. Julian Pierce, P-I-E-R-C-E, who had complained to a friend of death threats, was shot three times at point-blank range with a shotgun, Sheriff Hubert Stone said. It just looks like he was actually assassinated, the sheriff said, calling it one of the worst, unquote, murders he had investigated in his 33 years as a lawman. Governor Jim Martin appealed for calm in Robeson County. Governor Jim Martin appealed for calm in Robeson County, where two Indians were charged with holding a newspaper staff hostage in February. He said the state had offered a $5,000 reward for information leading to the killer's arrest and conviction. Pierce, 42, was an attorney in nearby Pembroke. He had resigned as director of Lumbee River Legal Services, which provided legal representation to low-income county residents to seek a newly created Superior Court judgeship. He was running against District Attorney Joe Freeman Britt, B-R-I-T-T, in the May 3rd Democratic primary. Pierce was found lying face down in the blood-spattered kitchen near a door that had several glass panes broken. Stone said the murderer either forced his way inside or broke the glass, stuck the gun through the opening, and fired. A longtime friend who said he had spent several hours with Pierce on Friday said Pierce had been threatened and feared for his life. We were looking for this to happen, said Earl Moore, owner of a cabinet shop. He knew something could happen. I won't go into it. If he had been white, he wouldn't be dead today. Moore said he wouldn't cooperate with authorities because he didn't trust them. Stone said he knew nothing about threats against Pierce. Robert Morgan, director of the State Bureau of Investigation, said, quote, we don't have any motive, unquote. He had a real good chance to be elected, said the Reverend Albert Chavis. I don't think he had any enemies. He was a fine man. He would have been elected. All we want now is a thorough investigation. Well, apparently the assessment that he had didn't have any enemies was premature. The fellow who didn't want to cooperate with the authorities may have known that things might turn out as they did in terms of the investigation. That was from the Mercury of Sunday, March 27th of 1988. 3 days later, the Mercury of Wednesday, March 30th of 1988, carried the following story in national news in brief. Sheriff rules out political motive in Indian death. A young man was charged Tuesday in Lumberton, North Carolina, with killing an Indian judicial candidate and an alleged accomplice committed suicide in a case the sheriff called just another murder stemming from a broken romance, not a political assassination. The death Saturday of Julian Pierce initially was characterized as a political slaying, and some people in Robeson County speculated it was the work of someone who objected to an Indian becoming a judge. The county's population is evenly divided among Indians, blacks, and whites. Pierce, 42, was a popular legal services lawyer and Lumbee Indian. He was running against the county district attorney for Superior Court judge in a county where racial tensions erupted last month in a hostage taking at a newspaper. Sandy Gordon Chavis, 24, a Lumbee Indian, was arrested Tuesday on a murder warrant. The dead man was identified as John Anderson Goines, 24, also an Indian, whose body was found in a closet at his father's home Tuesday with a bullet wound to the head. A murder warrant was issued for Goines. Pierce was dating Ruth Locklear, whose daughter, Shannon Bullard, had been involved with Goines. And, of course, Goines is gone. He was not in a position to testify. He apparently committed suicide. So, apparently the ghost of Lee Harvey Oswald lives, even if the late Franklin Pierce, or led the late Julian Pierce, excuse me, is no longer with us. Again, rest in peace, Julian Pierce. It's good to know there aren't political assassinations in America. And one more time, for those who missed it, my sarcasm here is in no way meant to belittle the deaths of the individuals I'm talking about. On the contrary, I feel compassion for them, fear for myself and those around me. I'm simply attempting to stick it to those interests in this country that continue to portray these deaths as just happenstance. The same thing happened in Nazi Germany. People died very quietly, pianissimo. The Nazis called it Nacht und Nebel, night and fog. Disappear at 4 a.m. and nobody cares. But as we know, that does not happen here. This is a caring, involved society. One caring person who's no longer involved is the late Aleta Marie Brown, the ex-secretary to Los Angeles Police Chief Daryl Gates. Research credit on this to the late Mae Brussel, March 29th, 1988, from the Los Angeles Times. Ex-secretary to Chief Gates, beaten to death. A woman who for more than 6 years served as a secretary to Los Angeles Police Chief Daryl F. Gates apparently was beaten to death in her Athens-area home during the weekend, authorities said Monday. The body of Aleta Marie Brown, 39, was discovered by a neighbor about 7:30 a.m. Saturday in Brown's home in the 1400 block of West 126th Street, said a spokesman for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. The house, in an unincorporated area in the southern section of the county, was ransacked and Brown's car was missing, authorities said. The Los Angeles County Coroner's Office officially listed the cause of death as asphyxia due to compression of the neck, an office spokesman said. Bruce Curitan, a brother, said Monday that Brown's family was devastated by the killing. He said that their father, Gonzalo J. Curitan Sr., died less than 2 years ago. Brown is survived by her mother and three brothers, one of whom is a sergeant in the police department, and a former husband, also a police officer. Brown served as a secretary in Gates' office from April of 1981 until last November 8th, when she was promoted to supervise the records section of the department's Southwest Division, said Officer Margie Reed, a police spokeswoman. Brown was hired by the department in 1968. She earned a bachelor's degree in sociology from Cal State Dominguez Hills in 1977, her brother said. Well, as the secretary to Chief Gates for many years and someone who had been with the records department since the fatal, and I mean fatal, year of 1968, when Robert Kennedy was assassinated in Los Angeles, as well as a lot of other key events. Obviously, King bowed out in April of that year in Memphis, Tennessee. She certainly would have been in a position to see a lot of interesting information concerning the machinations of the Los Angeles Police Department. In Radio Free America 9, talking about the Robert Kennedy assassination, and Radio Free America show number 23, talking about the criminal conspiracy section, some of the lawlessness of the LAPD was discussed. And it's interesting that just a few weeks later, maybe 2-3 weeks later, the March Fong Yu released the files concerning the Robert Kennedy assassination and revealed that a great deal of critical evidence had been destroyed just 2 months after the assassination in August of 1968, when obviously no serious investigation could have been completed by that time. And one wonders perhaps what Aleta Marie Brown may have seen during her years as Chief Gates' assistant, whether she would have known about the criminal conspiracy section or the PDID, the successor to the criminal conspiracy section's involvement with Western Goals, whether she knew something about the Robert Kennedy situation, because her death came just a few weeks before the release of the files. We'll never know. At any rate, she, too, is no longer with us. The hits just keep on coming. Legal figures are somebody you want to pay a lot of attention to, in particular their death. Small article, perhaps insignificant, the New York Times of Tuesday, October 7th of 1986. Man found strangled in park was a judge. A strangling victim found in Central Park last week has been identified as a former state prosecutor, who, for the past year, served as an administrative law judge in Brooklyn, the police said yesterday. The man was identified as Cecil A. Ivory II, 38 years old, of 100 West 92nd Street. A police spokesman, Judy Chiani, said that Mr. Ivory's body was found at 11:05 p.m. last Wednesday near 77th and the West Drive. Sergeant John Camporetto of the Central Park Detective Squad said there was no identification on Mr. Ivory's body. On Saturday, the sergeant said Mr. Ivory's body was identified at the morgue by friends who, quote, realized that he hadn't been around, unquote. No motive has been established for the killing. Often when a political assassination is performed, it is masked as random crime. You can break into somebody's home and shoot them to death and then rifle their drawers and take a few valuables, and they apparently surprised a burglar in their home. Or you can shoot somebody or slit their throat and sprinkle some cocaine or some marijuana around. Then it becomes a drug-related death. Or you can accost the person on the street, kill them, take their wallet and watch, and then they apparently were mugged and died during a robbery attempt. Or, of course, if nothing like that is performed, and if some of the apparent heart attacks, apparent strokes, quick-acting cancers and other things aren't used, you can always say the person had a couple of drinks or something, or the person was known to have a couple of drinks, then apparently they died of chronic alcoholism, like the late Peter Schatz. Sometimes people die in auto accidents, very strange auto accidents. From the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, December 31st of 1985, we find the following story, UPI story out of Boston, Massachusetts. This is concerning the death of Michael A. Ventresca, V-E-N-T-R-E-S-C-A. Michael A. Ventresca, an aide to two generations of Kennedys, was killed when his car was hit at a red light by a man charged with driving under the influence of narcotics. Friends said Ventresca, 38, who helped run Senator Edward Kennedy's campaign for the presidency in 1980, had agreed to run Joseph Kennedy II's campaign for Congress next year. We had planned on working together in the campaign for Congress, where he had agreed to play a significant leadership role, said Joseph Kennedy, who joined the 8th District Congressional race this month. Ventresca and his staff, nicknamed the Ventrescites, followed Edward Kennedy's campaign trail from state to state during the 1980 presidential primaries. Ventresca was also involved in the presidential campaign of Senator Gary Hart, Democrat of Colorado, in 1984, and the Senate campaign of Senator John Kerry, Democrat of Massachusetts. A lot of interesting connections, of course. We know that there were no political motives for the assassinations of John and Robert Kennedy. That's just the fodder for conspiracy theorists. And, of course, we also know that there were no political motives for the assassination of Allard Lowenstein in 1980. Lowenstein was gunned down after engineering a key Kennedy primary victory. Of course, Ted Kennedy would have made a much more formidable opponent for Ronald Reagan and the October surprise team than Smiling Jimmy. And it's interesting, of course, Gary Hart had rice at his wedding, so to speak, when he ran for president in 1988. And John Kerry, obviously, in the Kerry Committee hearings, has emerged as a very, very crucial senator. And the death of Michael Ventresca, I think, needs to be examined as a possible political assassination. Interesting piece of information concerning the death of Michael Ventresca carried in the Boston Phoenix, an unquote underground unquote newspaper in Boston. This from the Phoenix issue of January 7th of 1986. Cover story by Richard Gaines. The Political Big Chill. Mike Ventresca. Death of an Idealist. The bad news was traveling fast. It was burning through telephone wires, spreading grief and sadness far and wide. Across the world of Massachusetts politics, in the community governed by Michael Dukakis, in the neighborhoods of former Lieutenant Governor Tom O'Neill and the Kennedys, of Senator John Kerry, and beyond Massachusetts of Senator Gary Hart, to the local environmental lobby, the boards of business, the halls of labor, and the Catholic Church. Mike Ventresca was dead, killed in a car accident last Sunday morning, while he was sitting in his car at a traffic light on Charles Street at Beacon, when a 26-year-old driver for the Herald Circulation Department crashed into him at around 70 miles an hour, allegedly drunk and carrying cocaine. And again, I'm using sarcasm here. Allard Lowenstein was assassinated under very strange circumstances. There were direct connections to the Carter campaign. His ex-wife, the ex-wife of the man who killed him, Dennis Sweeney, who claimed at his trial that, quote, the CIA is in my head, I have radios in my head, unquote, a frequent complaint by those who have been subjected to the CIA and military's mind control programs. Anyway, Dennis Sweeney's ex-wife was married to Dr. Peter Bourne, who was Jimmy Carter's special White House advisor on drug policy. And in an article which we read a couple of weeks ago and are going to be re-including in our update, or we'll include also in our update on the Iran-Contra scandal, a former San Francisco narcotics official, Daniel Addario, was talking about how Dr. Peter Bourne helped stifle drug enforcement efforts. Bourne later dismissed by Jimmy Carter for writing a phony prescription for one of his aides. He also was a key official involved with Peter Bourne, was also a key official involved with neuropsychiatric research for the United States Army in Vietnam. Translation, quite probably, mind control. Another chilling political assassination was that of the Goldmark family in Seattle, Washington. Following stories from the San Jose Mercury News of Monday, January 13th. Of 1986. This is by Mark Zeilenziger of the Seattle Bureau. Slayings traumatize Seattle. Brutality of attack bludgeons residents' attitudes. And this concerns the assassination of Charles Goldmark and his family. said a sociologist and neighbor of the family who lived in a sedate and secluded middle-class neighborhood, it's the kind of crime that is so violent and so random, you find it very hard to cope with or to dismiss. It's so horrible because it can't be explained. Skipping down. Her opinion, obviously. David Lewis Rice, 27, an unemployed steelworker with a history of mental problems, is being held in the King County Jail. Prosecutors said Friday that his charges would be upgraded to 3 counts of aggravated murder after Charles Goldmark's death. Some of Goldmark's liberal friends, long opponents of the death penalty, are debating the appropriateness of capital punishment in this case. Rice is accused of entering the Goldmark home shortly before 7 p.m. on Christmas Eve, brandishing a toy gun. In court affidavits filed for his arraignment, police said he chloroformed the family, bound the parents with handcuffs, and savagely beat them with a steam iron before stabbing them repeatedly. One physician who treated the Goldmarks told friends it was the most savage beating I'd ever had to deal with. Police said Rice had been seen in the Madrona neighborhood on the western shores of Lake Washington hours before the Goldmark slayings, asking about the family's whereabouts. Police said Rice told them he had attacked the family because he believed the Goldmarks were, quote, communists and Jewish, unquote. After his arrest, a bloody iron and keys that fit the handcuffs were found in his modest inner-city apartment, along with books and pamphlets trumpeting anti-communist and anti-Semitic causes. Though family members say Rice had a history of mental illness, police said the suspect had never met the Goldmarks. Moreover, the Goldmarks were neither communists nor Jews. It was bad enough for this city that the brutal killing came on Christmas Eve. It was worse that the bloodbath had been carried out only 2 days after a group of neo-Nazi sympathizers had been convicted by a Seattle federal jury of carrying out a violent conspiracy designed to bring about racial revolution, unquote. Immediately after the bodies were discovered by neighbors, some speculated a link to the much-publicized trial. But this was also a star-crossed family, keepers of a liberal legacy, who once had been forced to undergo a brutal political attack by right-wing extremists. The star-crossed line is one of the pieces of doo-doo they always toss out about the Kennedys, too. They're not star-crossed, they're national security-crossed. And this irony, continuing with the article, and the fact that the Goldmarks had long been subjected to a brutal political attack by right-wing extremists, and this irony, along with the bottom-line realization that the Goldmarks had been victimized by cruel chance, resonated deeply in this tolerant, sometimes insulated city that steadfastly insists on maintaining its small-town charms even after a decade of booming growth. Goldmark, a lawyer and active Democrat, attended the party's San Francisco convention in 1984 as a delegate for Colorado Senator Gary Hart. His father, John Goldmark, a Harvard Law School graduate who operated a wheat and cattle ranch in eastern Washington, served as a powerful state representative more than 2 decades ago. But the elder Goldmark was defeated for re-election in 1962 after a prominent newspaper editor in the district charged that Goldmark and his wife, Sally, were communist sympathizers. The accusation, vigorously pursued by right-wing activists, was based on Sally Goldmark's party membership in the 1930s, which she had long since renounced. In 1963, in a case that drew national attention, an Okanogan County judge vindicated the family, ruling the Goldmarks had been libeled. The case had received renewed attention earlier this year with the publication of a critically praised volume analyzing the trial, and the younger Goldmark had kept the activist spirit alive. Again, for those people who find my use of sarcasm here distasteful, or if they simply don't understand why I'm doing it, it's this kind of thing that spurs my sarcasm. And this irony, along with the bottom line realization that the Goldmarks had been victimized by cruel chance, resonated deeply in this tolerant, sometimes, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's the kind of comment that has inspired the sarcasm I'm using this evening, for those of you who still haven't gotten the picture. Follow-up story to that from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, January 15th of 1986. From the National News in brief, by the way, Goldmark was a key Democratic official in Washington, one of the states regarded as a swing state in 1988. Something to keep in mind. In the National News in brief section from the Mercury of 1-15-86, we find the following follow-up story. A member of an ultra-conservative group said Tuesday that David L. Rice, the suspected killer of 3 members of a prominent Seattle family, came to him after the Christmas Eve attack to boast that he had, quote, dumped the top communist, unquote. Homer Brand said he first met Rice at the Duck Club, an ultra-conservative organization opposed to the federal income tax and the Federal Reserve System. Rice, 27, an unemployed steel worker, has been charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of attempted murder for the slayings at the home of Charles Goldmark, a prominent Seattle lawyer. Well, the Duck Club is a right-wing activist organization whose literature frequently portrays people of the Trilateral Commission and so forth being gunned down. And for those of you familiar with hunting, a duck club is a club formed by hunters to shoot ducks. And that, I think, is a chilling double entendre for the title of the duck club. And again, I think this is that killing should be examined in the political context that I believe it exists in. And this irony business is really ironic under the circumstances. Random victim, my foot. Another thing that should be reflected on against the background of this country's assassinations, great and small, is the very successful and ongoing mind control programs by the CIA and the military. Supposedly, they did not perfect a means of inducing someone to commit assassination that is pure, unadulterated drivel and can be readily disproved from information already on the public record. On the evening of Sunday, November 13th, right here on KFJC, from 7 to 10 p.m., we are going to discuss some of that material in Radio Free America number 5. I'm going to read one more interesting death here, political death. Then I think we're going to take a musical break, and we're going to go to the phones, and we will get some of your reactions to tonight's broadcast. We will finish up the hit parade next week. This is from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, June 18th, 1986. It's the obituary from the Scripps Howard News Service of Dean Reed, popular in Soviet bloc film and music. Dean Reed, the former Colorado high school track star who became a major musical force and film star in the Soviet bloc, died Tuesday in East Germany, possibly of a heart attack, friends in this country said. He was 48. Dixie Schnebly, Reed's U.S. manager, said Reed died while swimming in a lake behind his East Berlin home. He said a heart attack is probably the cause, but an autopsy has not yet been performed. Reed was treated with suspicion in Colorado for his decision to live in the Soviet Union and later East Germany. But friends describe Reed as a man who wanted to promote peace between the superpowers and felt he could influence the Eastern Bloc. He felt he could promote peace there on an American scale, said Schnebly, who grew up down the block from Reed in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, where he was a high school track standout. He spoke out there against the system just as he spoke out here. He felt change was his forte. So many people are threatened by communist as a word, but people who met Reed thought of him as Dean the Peacemaker, unquote, Schnebly said. Reed was thrown off a Denver talk show last year during his first return to his hometown in 25 years. Host Peter Boyles ordered Reed to leave after an angry exchange erupted over the causes of poverty in Ethiopia. At the height of the argument, Reed said Boyles sounded, quote, just like the neo-Nazis that killed Berg, unquote. The reference was to Denver radio talk show host Alan Berg, one of Boyles' close friends who was gunned down in front of his home 2 years ago today. Boyles said he should have slugged Reed. Reed was born September 22nd, 1930. It goes on to talk about his career. A couple of interesting notes. Of course, the assassination of Alan Berg by the Aryan Nations, not a group of misguided rednecks, as the public would have us believe, but rather members of an organization that has documented ties to the U.S. National Security Establishment, an organization with documented ties to the assassinations of the Kennedys and Martin Luther King, among others. We talked about Aryan Nations connections in Radio Free in the Radio Free America series 10 through 13, in particular numbers 11, 12, and 13. That is, to the assassination of John Kennedy and also Robert Kennedy. More on the Dean Reed death from the New York Times of Saturday, July 12th of 1986. We find the following story. This is an op-ed column datelined Cambridge, Massachusetts. It's by Kurt M. Campbell, and it's headlined the Eastern Odyssey of a Famous Unknown American. Mr. Reed's manager and longtime associate, Dixie Lloyd, confirmed that the singer had grown increasingly restless under the severe artistic restrictions imposed by the Soviet bloc and longed to return home. In his one exposure to an American audience on 60 Minutes, Mr. Reed spoke in an eerily accented English about a desire to return to Colorado, launch a socialist political party, and win Gary Hart's Senate seat. He visited Denver, his hometown, in October for the opening of American Rebel, an American-made documentary about his life. Again, Denver, the place where Alan Berg was killed, approximately 2 years before Dean Reed died under strange circumstances. More on the Dean Reed death is from the Examiner, the San Francisco Examiner, of Monday, June 23rd of 1986. An AP story dateline London headlined, Hint of Murder in Death of U.S. Singer in Berlin. The manager of Dean Reed, an American singer who lived in East Germany since 1972, thinks Reed may have been murdered because he was thinking of returning home, a newspaper reported yesterday. The official East German news agency ADN reported last week that Reed, 47, had died as a result of a tragic accident. His mother, who lives in Hawaii, said she was told he died Tuesday while swimming in a lake near his home. However, the Sunday Times of London said Reed's manager, Dixie Lloyd, was convinced the singer was killed because he was thinking of returning to the United States. She, Lloyd, does not believe he killed himself or that his death was an accident, the newspaper said. She is convinced that he was murdered because he had been openly talking about leaving the Soviet bloc. This, of course, puts a Soviet spin on it. I wonder if perhaps it was the fact not that he was leaving the Soviet bloc, but coming to the United States that may have resulted in his demise. Certainly, someone who wishes to found a socialist political party will ultimately have to contend with the likes of David Rice, the convicted slayer of Charles Goldmark, and his friends in the Duck Club, quote, unquote. Sunday Times correspondent, continuing with this article, Sunday Times correspondent Russell Miller, who wrote the article, said he was in East Berlin to interview Reed the weekend before his death was reported. He said the singer's wife told him the interview would have to be canceled because Reed was hospitalized for what was described as a serious viral or lung infection. However, Miller said an autopsy report showed Reed's body had been in the water for at least 4 days, which means he was already dead that weekend. Miller did not say how he gained his information about the autopsy. Possible that the Soviets did him in? More likely, I'd say, that he came up against the same force that ultimately dispatched Alan Berg. Next week, we will continue with the second part of the hit parade, quote-unquote, an analysis of suspicious deaths, many of them, I think, obviously political assassinations, all of them, in my opinion, probable political assassinations. And I think people should think once again about the kind of a world they're living in, about the kind of society they are creating every day. Those of you who do not think that you are changing with the times are, in fact, changing very quickly with the times. To simply remain the same, quote-unquote, in a society which is becoming what this society is becoming, is to change drastically and for the worse. In the final analysis, these acts are your acts. These are things that you are doing, passively perhaps, but they are things you are doing, and ultimately, they are things that will be done to those around you. Right here in the Santa Clara Valley, for example, last spring, Scotty Vollmer, a well-known and well-liked local musician, was killed by a skinhead who got a remarkably light sentence after plea bargaining. And the same skinheads had accosted a black woman in a San Jose park last year, and they were dismissed as distasteful but not overly dangerous. I didn't see any editorial comment one way or the other on the death of Scotty Vollmer. Scotty Vollmer died in relative silence. The death of Gretchen Burford in Palo Alto was something. I guess she was actually killed in Mountain View. She was an activist who had been very active on behalf of minorities, and was stabbed, and her killing has never been solved. She was also running for the Santa Clara County Bench, or was under consideration for appointment to the Santa Clara County Bench. So, rest in peace, Gretchen Burford. Rest in peace, Scotty Vollmer. As to the rest of you, do you think that you will rest in peace? Can you endure any peace of mind after what we have been discussing this evening? And we're going to pick up this topic of discussion next week. And again, I think people should reflect on the situation of Janet Lynn Walker, Dave's friend, who disappeared under strange circumstances. Nacht und Nebel, night and fog, pianissimo, very quiet,